Archaeology is the study of the past using material evidence, from stone tools and cathedrals to ancient DNA. It is a humanities in that its focus is humankind, but a science in many of its methods. It studies all periods of the past, from human origins to the present century. But this evening I want to concentrate on the deep past, the discovery of which in the 19th century was the fulcrum in which religious certainties about creation came to be tested. In 1650, Archbishop Usher calculated the date of creation as 4004 BC, a date that came to be printed in the margin of the authorized version of the Bible next to Genesis 1, the reading we heard earlier. In 1797, John Freer, a fellow of the Royal Society, wrote to the Society of Antiquaries of London, enclosing some flint implements he'd found at Hoxton in Suffolk, 12 feet below the ground surface, in undisturbed strata, along with the bones of extinct animals. The situation in which these weapons were found, he wrote, may tempt us to refer them to a very remote period indeed, even beyond that of the present world. The letter and the objects were duly filed away, along with their implications for the biblical chronology. It was not until the 1850s that the deep antiquity of these and similar finds was recognized. In 1859, the archaeologist John Evans read a paper to the Society of Antiquaries on the stone tools from Hoxton and elsewhere, concluding that this much appears to be established beyond doubt, that in a period of antiquity remote beyond any of which we have hitherto found traces, this portion of the globe was peopled by man. Charles Darwin's Origin of Species, published the same year, 1859, provided the evolutionary framework in which to try to comprehend the growing evidence for the time depth of our species. And we know now not just our own species, the anatomical form of which, modern humans, in archaeological parlance, we now think goes back some 300,000 years in Africa. When modern humans spread beyond Africa and across Eurasia between 100,000 and 50,000 years ago, there were Neanderthals across the whole of Europe, Denisovans further east and southeast, the diminutive Homo floresiensis, or hobbit, on the Indonesian island of Flores, and, announced just last year, a new species in the northern Philippines. The DNA evidence indicates interbreeding between modern humans and Neanderthals and between Neanderthals and Denisovans. But by 40,000 years ago, only our own species survived. So when did humanness begin, and is it exclusive to ourselves? I came back this morning from Sarawak in Borneo, where in the 2000s, I led a team re-excavating the Nia Cave, first excavated in the 1950s and 1960s. Some 40,000 years ago, a young woman, a modern human, died in the rainforests of Borneo, probably in childbirth. Her companions brought her body, or at least her skull and limb bones, and buried them in a pit beside where they camped in the cave, filling her skull with bright quartz pebbles that they had obtained from a source some 200 kilometers away. Over the last 5 years, I've been leading a team re-excavating Shanidar Cave in Iraqi Kurdistan, famous for the discovery of the skeletal remains of 10 Neanderthals, men, women, and children, by Ralph Selecki in excavations between 1951 and 1960. He argued that some had been killed in rockfall, but others buried with funerary rites, including one with flowers. His arguments have been at the center of debates ever since about how similar to or different from us were Neanderthals, especially in terms of their cognitive complexity, their imaginations. 2 weeks ago, we published our discovery of a new Neanderthal immediately by the flower burial, a along with sediment studies indicating that the body had been placed in a dug grave and then covered with soil, vegetation of some kind, and carefully placed stones. It's probably the most unequivocal evidence yet in Neanderthal studies for deliberate and careful burial some 70,000 years ago. The Shanidar Cave Neanderthals appear to have been thinking about death and its aftermath, like the near cave modern humans 40,000 years ago, even if we cannot grasp what they made of death's mysteries. The Neanderthal skeletons that Selecki found included an adult male that as a young man had received a massive head wound that probably left him partially blind and deaf, and who'd part of an arm missing. To survive for years afterwards, he must have been looked after by his community. Another had also looked after, had a healed wound from a projectile that had probably punctured his lung. It was the growing evidence for modern humans and Neanderthals having a common humanity, the capacity to show compassion on the one hand and to want to harm on the other, that led me to choose the second reading. For medieval philosophers, the natural world was part of a divine order, but Enlightenment rationality separated nature and culture and privileged the latter over the former. As the anthropologist Tim Ingold has written, the idea of man's control over animality, including his own and that of women, is part and parcel of more inclusive ideology of the human mastery or appropriation of nature, whose roots lie deep in the traditions of Western thought. And indeed, as we heard God's command to man in the Genesis reading, have dominion over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. We mustn't read the ethnography of present-day hunter-gatherers simplistically into the past, but it's striking how most of them conceptualize their world as a benign spiritual home, a giving environment, a treasure house of personages, each with language, reason, intellect, moral conscience, and knowledge, regardless of whether the outer shape is human, animal, reptile, plant, or rock. The many examples of indigenous Americans lying, in inverted commas, to European colonists about how the deer were few and far between, the hunting difficult, and so on, when the Europeans could see that the landscape was teeming with game, can now be understood in terms of hunters being respectful about and to their fellow beings. Hunter-gatherers classify the natural world in terms of equality, rather than our own Linnaean hierarchies. And there are hints of this in prehistoric hunter-gatherer societies as well. In the case of the Near Cave in Borneo, the ways in which the modern humans who started camping there 50,000 years ago treated the carcasses of the animals they hunted hint that they classified them in completely different ways from our hierarchical taxonomies of discrete families, genera, and species. There's widespread evidence that the beginnings of farming from some 10,000 years ago were associated with the loss of such animistic belief systems. The first agricultural villages of the Near East have special rooms devoted to ritual, and the material culture in them suggests that they were for the worship and appeasement of sky gods in the image of humankind, but separate from us, a relationship that in many respects presages those of the great monotheistic religions that were eventually to succeed them from about 3,000 years ago onwards. For me, the mystery of the deep past is on the one hand the growing evidence that our humanity, with all its complexities and ambiguities, is not unique to our species. Others were in God's image too. And on the other hand, that the search for the deeper meaning of human life and its aftermath has a deep antiquity, whether or not we term it religion. Before agriculture transformed relations between people and environment, the answers to who we are and where we're going and our place in the world seem to have been very far from notions of having dominion over every living thing that moveth upon the earth. We should not sentimentalize the past, nor look for simple stories to suit modern agendas, but Paleolithic notions of a common earthly community in which all living plants and animals, including ourselves, have an equal stake, should resonate with present generations' concerns to develop new ways of imagining ourselves and our place in the world, if we are to pass on to future generations a sustainable planet as it was on the sixth day of creation, when God saw everything that he'd made, and behold, it was very good.